Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasz Ziolkowski.
And today is Monday, December 12th, 2022. Our theme today is celebrations.
Wow.
And we'll 12, have 12. A lot more to say about that.
Yeah, you know why 12-12 is important. I know you know that.
You're going to tell me, though.
But you, well, it's in my ongoing effort to get you to learn something about numbers and months. 12-12 is a doomsday, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Monday and next month when we go into 2023, doomsday won't be on Monday. It'll be on your turn.
I have no idea.
Tuesday.
Well, that's what popped into my mind, but I didn't think that seemed way too easy.
No, it doomsday paradigm is really easy. So, yeah, you know, starting with April, the even numbered months go 4, 4, 6, 6, 8, 8, 10, 10, 12, 12. If I was going to be buried with a tombstone, that would be on my tombstone.
But those are numbers.
That's what counts.
Yeah, you know,
you can get along in the world without having any language, but you can't get along without having any numbers in the modern world.
See, I see things exactly the opposite, Mr. Z. Well, I can't get along without words.
Well,
numbers just do not stick in my head.
Yeah, well,
it's a great effort for me to remember numbers.
Numbers are important. Can't do science without numbers.
I do not disagree with you. I think numbers are very important. I just don't want them at the top of my list.
Yeah. Well, I understand. Not everybody, you know, some people like Keynesian philosophy, poetry. So, and that's okay.
Before we get too deep into the weeds, how about if I thank Andy Offit Irwin?
Oh, that would be good.
For his musical contribution that opened our show, Tarry Here, his original piece. Thank you so much, Andy.
Yeah. I had a great conversation about Andy yesterday. Somebody I was talking to, I said, you know, one of the best storytellers in the entire country. I would say he's also internationally known and a great storyteller, worked for Disneyland for a number of years. And they said, who? And I said, Andy Offit Irwin. Oh, that's not true. It can't be true. He's been telling stories for 50 years. So I said, no, he's not. Andy is a rather short-term storyteller compared to some people. You know, he's not been telling the stories for 50 years. So anyway, it was interesting. Person told me, I'm going to go and research that and see if he really worked it. I said, do you think that I would tell a falsehood? Anyway.
I'm speechless. Okay, so.
I'm assuming you knew that.
Well, I knew he did a lot of things. I do think of him as a long-term storyteller, but maybe my long-term is shorter than yours.
Well, it's just, you know, it's just something I found out about him when I first, you know, found out about him, you know, and he was actually with Disney for a number of years.
Well, he did a lot of things, but I think he's been a storyteller all his life.
Well, you know, every baby is a storyteller, but
some
professional
people,
story. as a professional storyteller, he's you know, not been doing it as long as Donald Davis and John Stelman and people like that. You look percussed.
I'm not sure what your message is, that's all.
Oh, just that we don't know a lot about everybody. People, okay. Sometimes there are people that you find out things about people, you know, it's like, for instance, the famous Vicini in the Princess Bride, the Sicilian guy, the actor Wally Shawn. I didn't realize he was such an educated man until I began reading this book about the making of that movie. He has a bunch of degrees, and he's also written screenplays and written plays, and also done a lot of other things, and was considered the smartest guy in the entire group of people who did that movie. And I always just knew him as he's a comedian, and he's still going. He's on the show of Young Sheldon, you know, take off from the Big Bang Theory. Anyway.
So celebrations.
There you go.
How about if we celebrate Speak, which is tomorrow night, since today is Monday, Speak is tomorrow night, Tuesday, and maybe even possibly this posting, this show, our radio show, might get posted before that, so people hear about
right.
Speak from us.
Yeah, and you know who's coming on Tuesday? Oh, by Zoom,
Stina
Fagerton. Yes, and she is a wonderful storyteller, and she's going to tell stories. She's from Tromsø, Norway. She's going to tell some stories from her parts of her heritage, from the cultures of Sami, Fen, and the Arctic Norwegian. And it's a good thing I'm not trying to talk about what she does too much, because I'm having a terrible time with my lips. But I'm excited about this. She is the last storyteller of the 10th anniversary year of Speak, and I'm excited about that. And in fact, after our broadcast today, I'm going to be ordering my season tickets for next year for both me and Terry.
I was just thinking about that. I just put that on my list, on my to-do list.
Okay, so you will be getting a season ticket, I bet.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Good. Right, that's great.
And if people want more information, they can go to
speakstoryseries.com. And there's all kind of information. And very soon, the lineup for 2023 will be posted. Adam told us in our meeting a couple of days ago, the entire lineup, and it's going to be a doozy.
Wow. That's pretty early. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, we don't have a performance in January.
Mm-hmm.
Second Tuesday of every month, but not January and not December next year. It's going to be just 10 Speak Story Series performances. However, it's going to be 10 months, but there will be 20 in-person concerts first Tuesday and Wednesday of the month. And that will be starting in February and go all the way through November. And so people who get tickets for Speak Story Series can choose to attend either on a Tuesday or Wednesday at the Opera House in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, or they can choose to see it online on Tuesday. The Wednesday program will not be a Zoom program. And what's interesting is some of the storytellers will tell the same program, do the same performance on Tuesday as they do on Wednesday. And some of them will be doing two different programs.
That's
really exciting. It is.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think we should get ready to get started because we've announced Speak for Tomorrow. And we've also jabbered a bit about other things. And we should get started on telling stories.
Well, that's go what, ahead. You have the floor.
Oh, you want me to begin?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And remind me of our theme again.
Celebrations.
Celebrations, good. Okay, there's all kinds of ways to celebrate. Immediately, when you told me this, I immediately thought of the person that everybody likes to celebrate for storytelling, and that's Hans Christian Andersen. Not everybody realizes that Hans Christian Andersen, the great storyteller, not everybody realizes that his stories were all not sweet and happy and bouncy for little kids. One of my first experiences, I'm talking about storytelling to a stranger. I was in a bookstore and this lady was talking to, I think it was probably a sister or maybe a cousin or something, but they were shopping in that bookstore. They were looking around for some presents for their children. And they each had a young child. And so the younger of the two ladies said, "Oh, let's go and find things by Hans Christian Andersen. He's a great storyteller. Everybody, like the kids love those stories." You know? And I said, "Excuse me, ladies, but I think you'll find, depending on the age of your children," and I said, are they like under 10? And she said, "Oh yeah, we each have a little girl, about 6 or 7, I forget exact dates for her daughter." Anyway, I said, I wouldn't get a Hans Christian Andersen book of stories for someone that young. A lot of his stories are very sad. It's very harsh. And they were shocked. "Really? I never heard that." And they walked away from it. So maybe 10 minutes later, I was at the counter. I was buying a couple of books, and the older lady of the two tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Why don't they tell everybody about these stories? I did a look at the end of three of them, and they were sad. I don't want to tell my..." she was really upset. I think she was going to blame me for Hans Christian Andersen messing up her day. Anyway, I said, "Well, that's what happens when Walt Disney gets a hold of stories. He makes them nice and easy for the kids to know." I said, I did tell her, "If you want to see a really bad one, read The Little Mermaid." She just said, by then the other lady was there. She said, "Oh no, okay." Anyway, I'm not going to do The Little Mermaid or that, but a lot of Andersen stories are harsh, but they always have a lesson. And they're celebrations of life in many ways. So once upon a time, there were 25 tin soldiers. Wow. They were brothers because they were all born from an old tin spoon. That must have been a big spoon. Rifles they held at their shoulders, and their faces looked straight ahead, red and blue, and oh so lovely were their uniforms. When the lid was removed from the box in which they lay, the very first words they heard in the world were, "Tin soldiers!" That's what a little boy cried, clapping his hands. They had been given to him because it was his birthday. And now he lined them up on the table. Each soldier looked exactly like the next, except for one who was slightly different. He had only one leg because he was the last to be cast. There wasn't enough tin left. Yet he stood just as firmly on one leg as the others did on two. And he's the one who turned out to be remarkable. On the table where they stood were many other toys. But the one that was most striking was a charming castle made of paper. Through the tiny windows, you could see right into the halls. Outside stood small trees around a little mirror that was meant to look like a lake. Swans made of wax were swimming around on the lake, and they were reflected in the mirror. The whole thing was so charming, and yet the most charming of all was a little maiden who stood in the open doorway of the castle. She had also been cut out of paper, but she was wearing the skirt of the sheerest tulle. T-U-L-L-E. I don't know if tulle or tulle. Tulle, is it? Okay, thank you. I don't come across that word very often. And the tiny sparrow, and the tiny sparrow blue ribbon over her shoulder, like a sash. In the middle sat a gleaming spangle as big as her face. The little maiden was stretching out both arms because she was a dancer. She was lifting one leg so high in the air that the tin soldier couldn't see it at all. And he thought that she had only one leg, just like him. Now there's a wife for me, he thought. But she looks rather refined and she lives in a castle. I have only a box and it has to hold 25 of us. There's no place for her. Still, I have to see about making her acquaintance. And then he stretched out full length behind a snuff box that stood on the table. From there, he could get a good look at the elegant little lady who continued to stand on one leg without losing her balance. Later that evening, of all the other tin soldiers, they were put back in their box and the people of the house went to bed. Then the toys began to play. They gave tea parties, fought battles, and danced. The tin soldiers rattled in their box because they wanted to play too, but they couldn't open the lid. The nutcracker turned somersaults, and the slate pencil scribbled all over the slate. There was such a commotion that the canary woke up, started chattering also, an inverse of all things. The only two who didn't budge were the tin soldier and the little dancer. She held herself erect on her toes with her arms held out. He was just as steadfast on one leg, and his eyes didn't leave her for a second. Then the clock struck 12. The lid of the snuff box flew open, and there was no tobacco inside. No, there was a little black troll. What a wily trick that was. Tin soldier, said the troll, keep your eyes to yourself. But the tin soldier pretended not to hear him. Well, just wait till morning, said the troll. When morning came and the children got up, the tin soldier was moved over to the windowsill. And whether it was the troll or a gust of wind, all of a sudden the window flew open and a soldier plummeted headfirst from the fourth floor. What a terrifying speed with his leg turned upward. He landed on his cap with his bayonet stuck between the cobblestones. The servant girl and the little boy went downstairs at once to look for him. But even though they nearly stepped on him, they couldn't see him. If the tin soldier had shouted, here I am, they probably would have found him. But he didn't think it was a proper thing to do to yell when he was in uniform. Then it started to rain. One drop came down faster than the other. It turned into a regular downpour. When it was over, two street urchins came along. Hey, look. There's a tin soldier lying here. Let's send him out for a sail. And so they made a boat out of a newspaper, set the tin soldier in the middle of it, and he sailed off down the gutter. The two boys ran alongside, clapping their hands. God save us, what waves there were in the gutter, and what a current. Well, it's true that they had just been a downpour. The paper boat pitched up and down, and at times it would spin so fast that the tin soldier swayed, but he remained steadfast, his expression unflinching, standing erect with his rifle at his shoulder. All of a sudden, the boat washed in under a plank that lay over the gutter. It grew just as dark as inside his box. I wonder where I'll end up now, he thought. Yes, well, this is all the troll's fault. Oh, if only the little maiden were sitting here in the boat, then I wouldn't care if it was twice as dark. At that moment, a big water rat appeared. It lived under the gutter plank. Have you got a travel pass? Asked the rat. Let's see your travel pass. But the tin soldier didn't say a word, holding his rifle even tighter. The boat raced along with the rat right behind. Oh, how it gnashed its teeth, shouting to sticks and pieces of straw. Stop him, stop him. He didn't pay the troll. He didn't show his travel pass. But the current grew stronger and stronger. The tin soldier could already glimpse daylight up ahead where the plank ended. But he also heard a roaring sound that would scare even a brave man. Just imagine. Where the plank ended, the gutter plunged right into a huge canal. For him, it would be just as dangerous as for us to sail over an enormous waterfall. He was already so close that he couldn't stop. The boat rushed forward. The poor tin soldier held himself as upright as he could. No one was going to say that he so much as blinked an eye. The boat spun around three or four times and filled with water up to the rim. It was going to sink. The tin soldier was standing in waist in water up to his neck. And the boat sank deeper and deeper. The paper began dissolving faster and faster. Then the water was over the soldier's head. That's when he thought about the charming little dancer whom he would never see again. And in his ears, the soldier heard, "Flee, warrior, flee. Death is after you." Then the paper fell apart, and the tin soldier plunged right through. But at that very instant, he was swallowed by a big fish. Oh, how dark it was inside the fish. It was even worse than under the gutter plank, and it was much more cramped. But the tin soldier was steadfast and stretched out full length with his rifle at his shoulder. The fish thrashed about, making the most terrifying movements. Finally, it grew quite still. What looked like a bit of lightning flashed through it. The light shone so bright, and someone cried loudly, "Tin soldier!" The fish had been caught, brought to market, and sold, and then ended up in a kitchen, where the serving girl slit it open with a big knife. Putting two fingers around his waist, she plucked out the soldier and carried him into the parlor, where everyone wanted to see the remarkable man who had traveled inside the belly of a fish. But the tin soldier was not the least bit proud of himself. They set him on the table, and there, oh, what strange things can happen in the world. The tin soldier was in the very same parlor where he had been before. He saw the very same children and the toys, on the table. And the lovely castle with the charming little dancer. She was still standing on one leg, with the other lifted high in the air. She, too, was steadfast. The tin soldier was touched, as he was just about to weep tears of tin. But that wouldn't be proper. He looked at her, and she looked at him, but neither said a word. At that moment, one of the little boys picked up the soldier and tossed him right into the stove, giving no explanation at all. The troll in the box was most certainly to blame. The tin soldier stood there, brightly lit, and felt a terrible heat. Whether it was from the actual fire or from love, he didn't know. The paint had worn right off him. But whether this had happened on his journey or from sorrow, no one could say. He looked at the little maiden. She looked at him. And he felt himself melting, but he still stood there, steadfast, with his rifle at his shoulder. Then the door opened. The wind seized hold of the dancer, and she flew like a sylph right into the stove to the tin soldier, burst into flame, and was gone. Then the tin soldier melted into a lump, and the next day, when the servant girl took out the ashes, she found him in the shape of a little tin heart. But all that was left of the dancer was a spangle, and that had been burned black as coal. The end. That's a sad story. First time I heard it, I actually cried.
Yes, it is.
But it is a celebration of love.
It is a celebration of love. And Hans Christian Andersen, what a character.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I've spent some time with him because I love his stories, and I remember when I lived in Arkansas, I gave a presentation about his life based on a book of his fairy tales and a smaller volume about his life. And at the end of my presentation, there was a question and answer session. And I was doing this thing at a retirement home in Arkansas, where I had told stories a number of times. And one of the ladies raised her hand and asked me, why do you change what Anderson has written when you tell the stories? And I was like, oh, I don't think I do that. And she said, well, when you tell any of the stories here, it's different than the ones I've seen in the movies. And I said, oh, you mean like the Disney version of some of his story? Yeah. And I said, well, I don't change his stories, but Disney certainly does. Because Disney doesn't want children to be crying at the end of his movies, except in happiness or joy. And a lot of his stories come out of people's mouths in a different way because they don't want to upset the kids. His stories were meant to teach lessons. They were not meant to thrill children.
And what did the woman in the audience say when you told her that?
She said, is that really true? Or are you telling a story? Because she had attended my storytelling sessions. And I said, I'm telling the truth about this, you know? And I said, this volume I have is mine, and I will be glad to leave it at the desk and ask the person in charge that if any of you want to borrow this and read it, you may. And that's what I did, holding my breath a couple of times as I talked to the person in charge. She said, are you sure? She said, somebody's liable to just think that's a wonderful thing to have and keep it. And I said, well, if they really felt that way, that would be okay with me, but I don't think that will happen. I'll mention it when I come each month in my storytelling, and hopefully they'll be enjoying it. And we can even have another discussion about Hans Christian Andersen. So,
wow. Well, I was interested in a good team member and telling or reading a Hans Christian Andersen story as well. And I decided not to, because the only story that really resonates with me is the Match Girl, the Little Match Girl, because of my experience with that story as a child. And, you know, I had the same experiences as most of the children in this country, which was hearing Anderson's stories cleaned up for children. But that story my mother read to me, The Little Match Girl, my mother read to me when I was very young. And it was very disturbing to me. I mean, it made me cry, of course, because it has a very sad ending. And at the age of 4 or 5, whatever I was when my mother read it to me, it had no redeeming qualities in the sense that I understood that fairy tales were meant to teach you things, but that one was just devastating. And I couldn't even understand why my mother would share it. It didn't make sense to me it was out of my experience. It was not a usual kind of story my mother would tell. And I guess she told it because she loved it herself. But it was disturbing to me at the time. And then, of course, now I realize that most of Anderson's stories would be disturbing to me if I had heard them all at the time in the way they were written. What an interesting character he was.
Yes. Yes. I really feel a great deal of sorrow for Anderson. His life was miserable.
Mm-hmm. You shared some of that in the past, yeah.
And it was difficult. And I I think he would have been a much happier man had he been born in, say, the last half of the past century. If he had been born around the time I was born, I think he would have been so much happier as a young man and as an adult.
Especially if he were born in Baltimore.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. he and I could have been friends. Yeah. We could have hung out together. I could have welcomed him into the Dorham Street gang. But anyway, he liked men very much. He wrote beautiful letters sometimes to ladies, but he was very fascinated with men. And in this day and age, he could have practiced that openly without being chastised and criticized and considered to be an awful person. Anyway, he got himself into a lot of problems.
Yeah. Well, he did write amazing stories.
Yes.
Well, on the theme of celebrations, after I tell our listeners that they are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, community-based radio, internet radio at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. I had to think about where I was sitting right now. But on the theme of celebrations, I'm going to talk about the National Association of Black Storytellers Festival and Conference, which was November 9th through the 13th, because that event it's still front and center in my mind. It was only a month ago, and it is always one of the great highlights of my year, and it was this year as well, even though many other things happened. I had other highlights, but as a celebration, it's near the top of my list. And I'm going to try to limit my storytelling today to just a couple pieces of the conference, because as a 4 and 5 day conference, it's really difficult to summarize all of that. So I'm just going to name some highlights and talk about them as storytelling experiences for me. The opening of the conference each year, which travels around to different cities across the United States, is all that opening session on Wednesday evening is always presented by the host affiliate of the National Association. So this year, the conference being in Baltimore, it was the Baltimore affiliate, the Griot Circle of Maryland, of which I'm a member, was the host group. And they did a big welcoming event, welcoming NAPS to the center of the universe, Baltimore as the founding center of the National Association of Black Storytellers. And it was a fun evening. There were Motown singers and a series of presenters who were just stunning. And of course, I knew many of them personally because I'm a member of the Baltimore group. But the next morning, the very first session, it was a standalone session. There were not other events or workshops or presentations going on at the same time. And I'm really glad that it was standalone, because I knew it was going to be a difficult session and I might have chosen to go elsewhere. I had it marked in my program to attend, but I knew that I would be emotional myself at this session. But because it was front and center, the first session of the conference, aside from the gala the night before, which is called pre-festival. So really the official start of the session was this Thursday morning workshop or Thursday morning presentation. It was a panel. The title was A Story to Tell, Minneapolis and Buffalo. And the presenters were Vusumuzi and Nothandu Zulu, two storytellers from the Minneapolis Black Storytellers Alliance, the Black Storytellers Alliance of Minnesota. And I had heard both of them as tellers before. I had never heard them speak kind of extemporaneously about their own lives and about their lives in Minneapolis. They opened the presentation talking about the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis in 2020. And the other primary presenter on the panel was Sharon Holly, who's from Buffalo, and she talked about the relatively recent killings of 10 Black people at the Tops, the Jefferson Street Tops Friendly Market in Eastside Buffalo. She's from the Tradition Keepers, Black Storytellers of Western New York, and she's a lifetime member of NAVS. And I had heard Sharon Holly tell before, as well as Vusumuzi and Nothandu. Nothandu and Vusumuzi started out the session talking about Kujichagulia, which is a Swahili term that means self-determination. It's one of the seven principles of Kwanzaa. So a lot of people know that phrase and understand its meaning for African Americans. And Vusumuzi and Nothandu have been talking about the importance of African American identity, the importance of self-identification, and what that means to community activists and storytellers. And so that's how they started the panel discussion. Both the Zulus and Holly spent a little bit of time just giving a short recap of those two tragedies, the one in Minneapolis with George Floyd and the one in Buffalo where 10 people were killed at the Tops Market. But they spent a lot more time talking about the lasting effects of those events. And when as I was taking notes during the session, you know, Stash, that when I'm in a storytelling session, I'm often taking notes because it really helps me to remember what I'm experiencing myself and to be able to talk about it afterwards. So the name I gave this session, the official name was A Story to Tell, Minneapolis and Buffalo. And I headed it in my notebook, Buffalo Minneapolis Trauma Session, because that's what the presenters talked about. But what I took away from it was the importance of telling these traumatic stories. So, Stash, you've been telling, you have prepared to tell Hans Christian Andersen stories today on the radio. And I kind of backed away from participating in telling Hans Christian Andersen stories because I found his stories traumatic as a child. And I wanted to talk, but it did remind me that part of the work of storytellers is to confront difficult truths and to find ways to share those with people. So on this theme of celebration, I've been thinking a lot this season about joy, darkness, and light. You and I did a storytelling session on the 28th of November. a standalone Stories in the Round session at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown on the themes of joy, darkness, and light. And for me, my entry into the NAVS conference started with this telling of a dark time and talking about ways to get past this darkness and to help other people cope with the trauma of these incredibly violent incidents that keep happening. They keep coming at us one after another. And I'm not going to recap the tragedies. Anybody who's listening who wants more information about these deaths in Minneapolis and Buffalo and many other both mass killings and the particularly egregious killings of individuals by people in power. All of that can be found online or in the newspapers. But what I wanted to talk about from this one session that opened the conference for me were the comments from the audience and particularly from the presenter, Sharon Holly. So I was at this session sitting in the audience with my roommate for the conference, who was Patricia Smart, who's from Hagerstown. And I often travel with her to Griot Circle, the affiliate of NABS, and to NABS events, because we're both driving from Hagerstown and we're good friends. And she was with me in this session. And when we stood up at the end of the session, she said to me, "We need to go up and talk to these people. We need to tell them how wonderful this session was." Half of the room was in tears by the end of the session because of the things that they were telling us about the aftermath of these horrific events and the trauma that these communities are still experiencing as a result of witnessing this violence. Some of the responses they were sharing were from children. Some of the responses they were sharing were from elderly people, people who had been on the scene. Wusumizi and Nathandu credited the woman who took the photograph, the video of the incident where George Floyd was killed, Daniela Frazier, and her courageous video that has made it around the world. She was 17 years old when she went against the orders of the police around her and the people who were standing there on the sidelines watching this man be murdered protected her to some extent. They stood between her and the police who were trying to get her camera away from her. And she filmed, she videoed the episode and then sent it around the world. And the importance of the public display of that kind of official violence. And the questions from students that the panelists and people in the audience with us had shared when they're told these stories, when they're asked to participate in conversations about these events. It's not that the kids didn't know. It's all over the internet. People are talking about it in the streets. Their families are talking about it. It's not possible to be a young person in this country and not hear these stories. But there's no attempt to help them cope in a public way. Sharon Holly talked about people in Black communities don't call police for transgressions that impact their quality of life, you know, boomboxes on the street or loud music, things that are a public nuisance, but they're not calling police because they don't want someone to get killed, because the consequences of trying to reduce noise pollution could end in death for somebody, some other member of your community. And students, kids especially, are saying, "Don't tell me about this. There's nothing I can do about it. This is just going to keep going on. I can't make a difference. I'm just going to refuse this information because I can't cope with it." And the importance of these conversations to help even children understand that there are things that they can do to make a difference, that some of what needs to happen is conversation, that people who are promoting violence as solutions to social problems have to understand different solutions, and they have to listen to their communities about the pain and trauma that is the result of violence. But when my friend Patricia and I did go up to talk to the panelists afterwards, there was a long line of people who wanted to shake the hands of the presenters and to thank them for their words and for carrying the stories out into communities. And so I spoke first to Vosumizi and to Mathando, because they were closer to me. I approached them first and shook their hands and thanked them. And then I spoke to Sharon Holly, who is the storyteller who was representing Buffalo and talking about the Tops Friendly Market murders. And in talking to her, I told her that I had watched my cousin, John Elmore, who is an attorney in Buffalo, on the Buffalo Evening News for about 10 minutes, just recapping what had happened, what he knew. And I think he was basically used as filler on that news program because they were waiting, the network was waiting for the city officials to be prepared to speak on air. And so John was called in as a leading attorney, and we watched him on television for 10 minutes. And that was my first real in-depth understanding of what had happened there at the shooting. And as soon as I mentioned John Elmore's name, Sharon Holly, the storyteller and presenter, said, "I know John." And from there, we launched into a conversation about how she knew John, and she knew several of my cousins, and I was already prepared to hear about people that I knew in Buffalo because I have a lot of family there. But talking to the storyteller who I had heard before but had not met personally just brought everything home to me, and I was already in tears before I got up there to the table to talk to the panel. And I started crying all over again. And it was just a very emotional experience for me. But the hope that these storytellers were able to communicate the importance of understanding the trauma that's still going on in the community and the ways that people can help. Sharon Holly owns a bookstore not far, only a few blocks from the grocery store where these 10 people were murdered. And she helped collect 20,000 books to distribute to children as part of their Halloween celebration. So the shooting was in May and of 2022. And since then, there have been all kinds of community events and outreach within the community and throughout Buffalo to try to start up conversations about what needs to happen next, how to solve some of these divisive and challenging conversations, how to change the narrative, how to help kids and people of all ages cope and understand the power that we each have to make a difference. So that's probably all I'm gonna say right now. I'm trying to figure out how to talk about both the workshop and the list of murdered people in our country. So this is the darkness part of the joy, darkness, and light conversations that I've been having with myself. That was on Thursday morning. I arrived at the conference on Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I went to that session about violence. By Saturday, which was my last day at the conference after a whole series of wonderful concerts and hearing storytellers, both in concert and in workshops, with wonderful advice and practice for me, with various forms of storytelling and sharing. I went to a Black storytelling songs and games swap on Saturday, just before lunch. And the moderator was Zara Baker, who I knew as part of the duo of Zara Glenda Baker and Emily Cooper Lanzana, who are part of, they founded a group called In the Spirit. And they perform for children and adults all over the country, but most significantly probably in Chicago where they live. But this session that Zara Baker led on storytelling, songs, and games, this was the light session. It was close to the last session that I attended. I was there for the evening program on Saturday night. But midday on Saturday, I just got swept up in joy and excitement. Zara Baker is a musician. She's a vocalist. She calls her work spirit-filled stories and spirit-filled music. She sings solo as well as regularly with Emily Cooper Lanzana, and has performed in, both of them have performed in storytelling festivals all over the world, all kinds of arts festivals as well. But in that session, Zara got, there were probably 50 people in the room, and she arranged us, first of all, in a huge circle. So they moved all the chairs to the edges of the room, and there were so many people there, there were not enough chairs. People sat on the floor. And she just invited members of the audience to come up. She made us participants in this workshop, and she invited us to get up and sing a rhyme, sing a song, do a chant, and teach it to the rest of us. So I'm just gonna mention two examples. There were Kwanzaa chants. You know, Kwanzaa's coming up beginning December 26th. And those seven principles that many of us are trying to commit to memory, Umoja, Ujjagalia, self-determination. Umoja is unity. Ujima, collective work. Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Nia, knowing your purpose. Gomba, creativity. And Imani, faith. Several people in that session taught us chants and songs for making sense of those Swahili words for children who don't speak Swahili, as well as for adults who don't speak Swahili. I do not speak Swahili, although I'm learning new words every day. That was a highlight. There was dancing. Several people taught us dances. Sharon Holly, who was one of the presenters at that Thursday morning session on violence, taught us a tune that is one of the few that I can remember without notes. It's to the tune of Bingo. You know, B-I-N-G-O, that song about the dog. B-I-N-G-O, 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 and Bingo was his name. Oh, well, this one is S-T-O-R-Y, 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 come listen to a story. And there were a whole series of verses that she taught us to that tune. For me, it was one of the most accessible and easy to learn. I was taking notes all through that session of all those rhymes, but I didn't always transcribe memory tools for me to remember the melodies or the timing, the rhythm of these chants. So I came away just my head buzzing with stories. And that's really my memories of the conference as a whole. And I hope to keep sharing these stories with everybody. And I type up my notes and get a grip on everything that happened there.
Thanks, Fanny. That was interesting. It was very interesting. I had a comment to make to you that perhaps you will understand why I like Anderson and have ever since I was young, even though I when I started to read him as a young person, I was shocked. But I wasn't as shocked as a lot of people I learned over the years, because I was interested in I learned to read and to appreciate stories when I was very young, because of my father worked construction jobs for Gas and Electric Company in Baltimore, and he frequently found books. He frequently would come home with a book and say, "Look what I found sitting on the side of the road," and or this and that. And one thing he found was a collection of small, tiny little books that were Edgar Allan Poe stories. And so, boy, I wish I had those now. But as a kid, I read those books, and they were truly about the size of a pack of cigarettes. And there was a little tray that they fit in. If my memory serves me correctly, there were seven of those little books, and they had cool stories in it. And so I didn't find Anderson's stories quite as harsh as some people did, because I was used to reading Edgar Allan Poe. And anyway, I thought I would mention that.
That's a great story. Edgar Allan Poe warmed you up for Anderson.
Yeah, right. I just and I've always liked Poe, especially because you know, he's buried in Baltimore, and I actually went to the spot where he's buried when I was a teen. I since then I have taken people who were interested in things like seeing the house where Babe Ruth grew up and stuff like that. Although the house where Ruth grew up is not the place that they have as the Babe Ruth center. And it's in Baltimore also. And it's closer to downtown Baltimore than it is to any neighborhood. When I was a kid, I knew that Babe Ruth had grown up along the harbor, Baltimore, and I took some pride in that because I grew up right there in that area too, which is called Fells Point. Anyway, you know, kids like to attach themselves to things that are in their area and make it part of them. So I felt like Babe Ruth and I grew up in the same place, even though we probably didn't grow up certainly in the same block. And he certainly grew up with better baseball credentials than I did.
Wow. This is a fitting time, I think, probably to say thank you to our listeners and close out the show. Thank you, Stosh. A really interesting take, two separate takes on celebration and how we get there and the darkness that often introduces us to celebratory activities. Yeah.
I keep wondering, religion or religious group that has ever decided to celebrate the stories from the Bible in a different way? For instance, is there any religious group that celebrates the birth of Christ in a more sensible place than December 25th?
Well, why don't we research that and come back next week?
That sounds like a good idea. Really? Because everybody admits that, you know, the historical figure of Jesus Christ could not have been born under the conditions as described in the Gospels, because, you know, it's the wrong season of the year for baby sheep and stuff like that. Anyway, go ahead. Never mind. I'm finished.
This is Fanny Crawford and
Stash Ziokowski,
your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. And that's our show. The Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you.